서울은
Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. You don't know me.
What you gonna do?
Yeah. Time is money, so don't f*** with mine. With my girls, I'ma have a good time. Step back with your chit chat, killing my vibe. See, you can't get too much of a good thing. So I'm here dressed up in the finest things. Well, please hold your tongue, don't say a damn thing. iPhone camera flashing, please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking.
Ooh,
nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah.
I mean, we can throw shapes together, but it doesn't mean you're in my circle. Cruise through life and I'm feeling on track. If you can't keep up, then you better fall back. Cause money look better when I see it all stacked up. Camera flashing, please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. Nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. Nah, nah, yeah. You don't know me. Yeah. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. Nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie. Camera flashing, please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. Nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie.
Just tuning in, I'm Tommy Martin, and this is Ireland's only pop-up radio station, Walk In My Shoes Radio. I'm back today between 1 and 3, and I'm delighted to be joined by the great, the one and only, Keith Barry is here.
How are you? Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to have you, Keith. What's going on? What's going on with you at the moment that you're able to take 2 hours out of your busy schedule to be with us?
Well, there's a lot going on, I suppose. You know, I'm getting ready for the... I know we're going to be talking movies in a while. We're getting ready for the third installment of Now You See Me, which we're starting to work on at the moment. I'm working on my new live show, which I'll be taking around the country from December 28th. So that's called Keith Barry's Magic Madhouse.
Yeah.
So I'm going back to my roots. I haven't put magic, like as in visual magic, in my show for about 15 years now. It's all been mentalism and hypnosis and that kind of stuff. So this time around, I'm going back to my roots. There's escapology in the show. There's visuals.
The old-fashioned tricks.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say old-fashioned. I'd say modern, new.
But you know, the craft of being an illusionist and magician, because I never know exactly how to describe you. But in this case, with this show, magician is the correct...
Yeah, well, I'm putting the hypnosis and I suppose the mentalism in there as well, the kind of mind reading, mind hacking stuff in there too. But there'll be at least a full half of comedy visual magic in there. And before that, I've got to finish off the current tour, which is in the Olympia on November 10th and 11th. That's hypnomagic, and that is hypnosis and mainly mentalism and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I perform mass hallucination on the audience where they temporarily... basically cause a hallucination in their mind, and they know the effect is only happening in their mind in the audience. So it's kind of a bit crazy to see the audience go, just a little bit crazy for a moment. But it seems to be that, you know, with that type of stuff that people just really enjoyed for what it is, which is lighthearted family entertainment, you know?
It's funny because you've been on the show on Weekend AM with us, and some members of the crew are quite happy to say, right, let's do this thing. And some people just just are like, no. Is that because of susceptibility or less susceptibility, or are people just afraid of what might happen, or what do you find with people?
I think people are just a bit nervous of what might happen. I think their fear mainly is of being embarrassed in some way. But look, with the type of stuff that I do, you know, I don't embarrass anybody anyway. You know, with the hypnosis, I always ask people to be willing participants. So I never force somebody to hypnosis or try and hypnotize them against their will or anything like that. And you know, you have to be responsible as a hypnotist, so you don't hypnotize people to do things against their morals or their values either, you know? And so that's, I suppose, the reason why a lot of times when I'm walking around, you know, on the streets or in a hotel or whatever, people look at me and then they look down at the ground and walk past me.
What are you going to do?
So I just say to those people, you can say hello, and I'm not always constantly hacking brains or hypnotizing people walking around.
So you say
place, you know?
People would never do something against their morals or values, so if they end up barking like a dog, you know, on jumping around their hind legs, that's not, again, that's just who they are fundamentally deep.
Well, no, I in a live show context, I always say, look, I'm going to get you to do things you wouldn't ordinarily do. If you think that after the show you'll have a problem with that, or even that your partner will have a problem with that, my advice to you is don't come on the stage.
Yeah.
So now, with that being said, who wants to come up? And hundreds of people run to the stage every night. It's interesting. And yeah, with the current show with Hypno Magic, I picked topical subjects. So for example, I create a UFC fight night. So I hypnotized 20 volunteers to believe, like really believe, that they're crazy UFC fans. But then I hypnotized one of them to be Conor McGregor. Yeah. And I hypnotized one of them to be Floyd Mayweather. So you can imagine how that, I suppose, plays out on stage.
Did it turn ugly?
It turns ugly, yeah, but in a funny way.
Yeah.
You know, it never goes too far, let's put it that way. And then, you know, I perform a magic show for people under hypnosis when I revert them back to being 5 or 6 years of age again. And they act like it's the most magical experience of their lives as they're visualizing these magic tricks as being real tricks, you know.
Can I just ask, you know, what you do takes an incredible understanding of the human mind.
Mm.
And, you know, we are here, let's not forget why we are all here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mental Health Awareness Week, today's World Mental Health Day. Is it an area you're interested in? Is it another side of the same coin, if you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, being honest, I've treated probably thousands of people at this stage over the past 50, it makes me sound old now, but 15, 20 years for all kinds of issues. So everything from phobias, obviously, and addictions, but right through to anxiety, stress, and all the way through to clinical depression. So I have an experienced understanding of the human brain, how it functions, how it works. And I do understand the various forms of depression, anxiety, stress, and I'm very aware of mental health. And in these days, I think it's wonderful that we're talking about it. And you know, I think it's important for people to realize not only that there's help out there, but I think sometimes it's important to encourage people that they can help themselves. And they can do that through certain research that they can do. Like, for example, the first thing I'd say to people who are listening today who may be suffering from a certain level of anxiety, or people who can't sleep, and I know we're going to be talking about sleep later, I found a great app that I use myself and for people. Like, I met somebody last week, they rang me, it was a friend of mine, and they were hugely anxious and they were having like a mild panic attack, is the way I put it, and they had nobody around them to help them at that moment in time. So I said, listen, you just need to focus on what I'm saying to you. Find this app, it's called calm.com. I have no affiliation with it whatsoever, I just found it kind of myself, and that's one of the better apps out there, because A, for people out there that need help, I know it's free. That's the first thing. Like the lower end of the scale, I mean, they have different paid versions, but the one that you can use, it's free. And it's a wonderful app for just calming oneself down. Now, with these kind of things, sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but with this particular person, I'm just giving this as a broad example. Last week, I got them to do that, and they rang me back the next day, and they said that the most wonderful night's sleep and their anxiety just kind of dissipated. So I just encourage people just to do a little bit of research themselves on why maybe they're feeling this way. You know, very often people don't realize that, you know, the reason they're stressed or depressed or have certain problem, a lot of that lies on a subconscious level. And I think people need to educate themselves on the subconscious mind. And your subconscious mind is what regulates your autonomic nervous system, which is your heart rate, your breathing, your blood flow. And these are the things that when we get stressed or depressed or anxious, that they fall out of kilter. And what people need to try and do, at least, is just learn even a little bit about the subconscious mind, how it works, and then how they can kind of change the chemicals and the electrical signals that are going on a subconscious level. They can do it themselves, with or without drugs. And for me, I'm not a medical practitioner, and I'm sure a lot of people out there listening, they're going to the doctors, they're doing the right things, they're taking the medication, and that's the absolute right way to do it. But they need to know that there's other options out there, I suppose. And obviously talking about it is wonderful, and then just a little bit of research as well, you know?
Yeah, I always think with you, all aspects of the human mind being covered, I guess, this week, but the amazing nature of the human mind comes through in all your work, and the things that it can do, the things it can be made to do, absolutely shines through. We're going to talk a lot more about that throughout the show. By the way, you're clearly not afraid of embarrassment yourself to come on air with me for 2 hours, so thank you.
Yeah, I'm waiting for someone to play a prank on me. I'm waiting for Justin the Turkey
but
to pop back out
we
there.
We have lots coming in the next 2 hours. We're going to be talking to sports psychologist Dr. Olivia Hurley, who'll be with Irish women's rugby star Jenny Murphy. Really interesting item that, on lots of aspects about sport and visualization. We'll get your take on that as well. We were talking about the match last night, of course, couldn't get away without that. Dahi O'Shea will be on the line. Some sleep tips, as you say, and a bit of music as well. But first, like, let's take a song. It's I love this one, Justin Timberlake, Can't Stop the Feeling.
Yeah. I got got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. Come on, like the way we rock it. So don't stop.
Yep, raising awareness for World Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio. Tommy Martin and Keith Barry keeping you company until 3 o'clock today.
And we have coming up with us right now, Michael Dougherty from the RT Guide. And apparently this summer has been the worst Hollywood summer in 20 years in terms of box office figures. And of course, Michael Dougherty is here to tell us why. And which movie would you like to talk about first? The Mummy, I believe, was terrible. Baywatch didn't do so well. Or Valerian. So the choice is yours.
We can take our pick,
all those we've had Dustin already in here. Of all those turkeys,
we've had a lot of turkeys. A lot of them are even bigger than Dustin. Yeah, it's been a real shock to the system for Hollywood, because they expect a lot of their what they call tentpole movies. They rely on the summer. They have the big movies over the summers, and they think, well, okay, franchises, sequels, they will do very well. Normally it does, the formula works. This year, and I'm pleased to say, because I'm tired of franchises and formulas.
I'm not.
You have a particular reason, which we'll talk about in a second. You have skin in the game, exactly. Yeah, it was a very underperforming summer. Like I said, the worst since 2006. I suppose the first culprit would be something like, we'll talk about The Mummy, which I know is coming up shortly, because this was expected expected to be not just a huge movie because it has Tom Cruise, Mr. Blockbuster, but it's supposed to be the start of a franchise. In fact, it is the start of a franchise. Universal is re-releasing all of the classic old horror movies, Mummy and Werewolf and Invisible Man, with a lot of big actors, big name actors, Javier Bardem, etc., Angelina Jolie. But they started off with Tom Cruise expecting it to be a big deal.
Surefire success.
But unfortunately, it turned out not to be the case. Here's a clip.
So dead, they're talking about the franchise, are they, Michael?
They're talking about the franchise, it's a bit moribund. It did very poorly. They expected it, because you expect the first one needs to go above and beyond. And this wasn't one of these low-budget jobs, there was a lot of money in this. But obviously we mentioned like Keith and franchises, but I have to say one quick story about Keith, because he mightn't even remember this, but I spent a lot of time in film sets, and generally it sounds exciting, but they're usually quite boring. But I love being there. You get to watch these things, and it's a lot of hanging around and cups of coffee. So I went over to Now You See Me 2, which is being shot in, I think it was Greenwich, in Greenwich Market. It was a night shoot.
Yes, we did it. That was the Dave Franco shoot.
It was a night shoot, really busy. And I'd been told in advance, if you come over, you get to see an exciting shoot. Dave Franco's going to do a few tricks. I think it was Giant Cards, if I remember.
Yep.
And the director, John Chu, will speak to you, and Dave Franco will speak to you, and it'll be great. So I sat there for hours, and it was so busy because it was hundreds of extras, and it was a busy set, and a lot of stuff going on, night shoot, that John Chu was just too busy, but he was a nice guy, came over, shook my hand, said, listen, I'll chat to you, Michael. I'll give you a ring next week, it'll be fine. Dave Franco comes over, I'm really busy, I'll have a chat. And the ADs are pulling him away. And the poor PR girl was apologising profusely, saying, I'm really sorry. And I looked at my monitor, and I saw everybody going over to one person. And normally they all go over to the director. I said, hang on, that's Keith Barry. So I said to the PR girl, Would you any chance to get a few words to Keith? And he goes, oh, Jesus, he's so busy. We didn't even put him on the list because he was so busy. I said, would you mind just saying, I said, because I know there's been a few journalists over here, but I'm the only Irish journalist, and maybe, you know, Irish and RTE. And sure on it, Keith comes around, 15 minutes, chat away, all the insights. It was fantastic. Made my story. And I always remember at the very end, when the AD came over to me, it gave me my final line of the piece, because he said to me, Michael, I have to go over it. I've got to teach Lizzie Kaplan how to decapitate a dove. And that was the end line of my piece. So officially on air, thank you very much, Keith, for being so generous.
It was a crazy shoot that night. And just very quickly, how to decapitate a live dove is actually a very difficult thing to do. But she did it wonderfully well, but it never ended up in the movie. She ended up producing the doves instead, which I taught her how to do in her caravan,
so
in her trailer.
The dove died in vain.
But a lot of people don't know, at the end of that, a pigeon appeared in my pants. I'm in the movie. I'm officially Mr. Pigeon Pants, and Now You See Me Too. Yeah. So there you
go. It's a great role. It's a great role, that. Slightly less sort of endearing roles, or with less emotional heft in Baywatch.
Yeah, again,
which was one of the big remakes.
There's been a lot of remakes. And again, it's very lazy. It's just you remake a TV show because you feel that the audience will come along. Now, it has worked, and it works memorably with one of the hits. There have been a few hits this year, by the way. Wonder Woman, for example, remake of a TV show. Baywatch was just lazy. Unfunny, poor script, and probably miscasting all around. Very, very poor movie. It did very badly, and again was expected to be the first of many movies, but I suspect after the...
If you could pinpoint where something like this goes right and where it goes wrong, what went wrong with Baywatch? Is it simply about the script?
It's always about the writing. It always goes down. It doesn't matter how strong an actor you are. If the writing isn't there, it just, you know, you can't make things that, well, maybe Keith can pull stuff out of thin air, but yeah, actors can't pull stuff out of thin air. And it's always, if you look at the problem of any major movie that has gone badly wrong in the last 100 years, it's at the fault of the script writers. And it's usually writers. It's, yeah, it tends to be plural, because he can't really do it by committee. Well, I believe we actually have a clip of Baywatch.
Shall we take a clip?
Yeah,
wonderful work.
If you insist.
Cinematic genius.
If you insist.
Hey, Steph.
Hey.
New Kids on the Block here is from Iowa.
Oh, man.
Really?
Let me ask you this. A lot of oceans in Iowa?
No, just ponds and lakes and cocky pretty boys. Hey, Mitch, what happened to that last pretty boy recruit we had?
He died.
What is this, lifeguard hazing? I'm Matt Brody. Hold the world record in the 200 meter.
Hey!
Matt Brody!
Yes, absolutely. And we still
don't give up.
So Dwayne The Rock Johnson there, Hasselhoffing his way to box office flop. Yeah. What happens with one of these flops, Michael? Do people lose their jobs? Is there panic in Hollywood, or do they just mop it up? Do they just absorb
the losses? Well, it depends. I mean, like I say, this has been a very, very bad summer. They expect the summer to do well because you've got July the 4th, you've got some big opening weekends. What will probably save 2017? There were some movies that did well. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, Wonder Woman, and Spider-Man Homecoming did very well over the summer. They all did $800 million business. Everyone's happy. But overall, the summer was down. But what's been very good for 2017 is that the films around the summer, they were quite clever. They released some summer-type movies, like Beauty and the Beast, the new Fast and the Furious, before summer, in the spring. And that did, they both did enormous business. They both did over $1 billion, which is really incredible. And now, what they need now for the rest of the year, they need a few big ones to hit. They expected Blade Runner 2049 to hit, and I think it's a terrific movie. It hasn't. It bombed.
Really?
But it really bombed. It's bombed very, very badly.
Hugely hyped,
and I think it's terrific, but it opened up really low business, and you have to get the business in the first couple of weeks, and they're already, the postmortems are out there, aimed at the wrong audience, aimed at people like me, you know, fellas who remember the first time round, you know, not the natural cinema goer. But then again, they get hits like It. If you remember the scary movie, the horror movie, that movie was shot for $35 million and has already made $600 million.
We're gonna hear a bit more about the surprise hits of the summer, the movies that have rescued the summer, but let's take a bit of music first.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given. Get his pain. When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I'm down in my mind.
Welcome back to Walk In My Shoes Radio. It's Keith Barry here with Tommy Martin and, of course, Michael Doherty. And Michael's been talking about the summer, I suppose, what label would you give them? Instead of blockbusters, is there an opposing name to them?
Turkey busters.
Turkey busters, there we go. So there's been a few of them. So I thought with, you talked about movies and being the movie expert, I thought we'd like to try a little experiment if you're up for it, okay?
Okay, here we go.
So here's what we'll do. I'm going to record this. What I'll do is I'll pop it up on Twitter and my Facebook page later on so that people can kind of see through my eyes what I'm looking for when I'm trying to hack into somebody's brain. So here's what we'll do. I want you to, well, hang on, let me get this video on. 3, 2, 1. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to do, Michael, I want you to think of an actor or actress of your choosing. It doesn't have to be your favorite actor or actress or anything like that. And it's important, I suppose, for everybody listening and everybody in this room and everybody who's going to watch later, you haven't told me this name in advance or anything like that. And there's no way anybody could know this except you right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So focus on this actor or actress and focus on a movie that he or she was in, if you can. Bring up some imagery of that movie. And if you can, just focus on the spelling of the movie. Look at me. Is there... Now, I'm just trying to sense this from you. I'm not sure, but is there a B in the spelling of the movie? Is there a B? Or P?
No.
P. Yes, I thought... Yeah, I wasn't sure it was a B or P, but there is a P in the spelling of it, yes? And focus on that for me, whatever that is. Okay? And you're only deciding on the movie now, yes?
Yeah.
And is this person in a lot of movies?
He hasn't, no.
No? Okay, so look at me. There's an O in the spelling of the movie as well?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. And in your mind now, whatever his name is, this is, focus on whether it's an older generation or younger generation actor. Ah, see, you nodded. Now, I'm just going to explain to people out there listening. He nodded very quickly on that. So this person's actually deceased. They're dead. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, good. And I don't mean good, but I mean good that I got it right. Okay. So, and I'm sensing something to do with something that you got this morning or yesterday is relevant to this. Somebody coming to your door. Does that make any sense at all? Is there an S in the spelling of the movie? Is there an S?
Yes, there is.
Okay, because I'm sensing... look at me, just...
Oh, actually, yeah, I see where you're coming.
Yeah, because I was plucking that out of your subconscious mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you got post today or yesterday, and you were thinking of the postman?
Yeah, yeah.
And look at me, if it was the postman, are you thinking of John Garfield?
Ah, here, come on. I mean, he's not even a well-known actor. I mean, he's...
But that was it?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the words of the monkeys, I'm a believer.
there we go. Wow.
That's, yeah...
John, I haven't even heard of that.
And most people haven't. That's why I thought I'd choose somebody from one of the older actors.
You're aware of him, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I study movies as well, so when I'm asking somebody to think of a movie or an actor or an actress, but I think we're going to go on to Get Out now, are we? One of the
Well, actually, I want to get out. Actually, yeah, that's it. I just want to go home.
Yeah. Michael's deeply unsettled by the way.
In terms of movies of the summer that I've actually done really well, the template for Hollywood is to get a lower budget movie that actually makes a ton of money. Because things like Transformers bombed, but yet it made 140 million. And people go, how could it bomb? It bombed because it cost 240 million. Mm. So that's why it bombed. Whereas something like Get Out cost 4.5 million and it's made $400 million. Because it's just a smart movie by a little known director, no famous actors in it, almost as non-famous as the guy I mentioned a few minutes ago with Keith. Yeah. So it's just... Word of mouth did very well because it's a clever, smart movie.
Why did it work? Apart from being clever and smart, what was the setup?
Well, because it's a great, but it's an inversion of the race idea. It's these white guys, this white girl who brings home her black boyfriend to her sort of real tweedy, waspish parents and her country club friends.
It's very
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and I don't want to add any more than that because it's coming out soon on DVD and it'll spoil it for you. But it bends those conventions.
People still watch
and
DVDs. Tropes. Sorry for interrupting. DVDs still
a thing. Yeah, I still have a few videos because there's some of my favourite movies, and yes, they're always vintage. Never appeared on DVD, so I've had to keep my VHS player.
Such as The Postman twice, which is the one. The Postman,
absolutely. That's I have that on VHS and DVD. You completely thrown me now. But yeah, so it's
can you hack back into Michael's brain?
Get back on track. Get Out is a hypnosis movie. It ends up being about hypnosis.
It is, yeah. Because I know this is something that obviously you tapped into as well. But it's a very smart movie. And again, you mentioned what's the bottom line for any movie? It's the script. And as we hear in this clip, it's a very very
Let's
smart script.
We've become such homebodies.
Yes, yes, yes. But even when you go into the city, I've just had no interest. The chores have become my sanctuary. Doors have become my sanctuary. Get out. Sorry, man.
Okay.
Get out!
Yo! Yo, chill, man.
Get out!
Chill! Chill, man!
So that was the sound of Get Out. Will there be a Get Out 2 then?
Oh, absolutely. There will be a Get Out 2, 3 and 4 because they can afford to. They're already on the pig's back with that movie.
I better put in a phone call. Eamon is out there listening. Eamon, call whoever's producing absolutely. Get Out and get me on there as a consultant, will you?
Yeah, because they have...
My exclusivity clause has run out on Now You See Me.
Listen, just to round off on surprise hits of the summer and movies that made it work for the poor old big Hollywood studios. Beauty and the Beast was one. Now, when the trailer come out, my kids were drawn to it, and you know, I was interested to see how they'd react to it. A live action remake of a classic and beloved animated movie, almost note for note, scene for scene, and a huge hit.
Huge hit, and again a surprise. They expected it to be a hit, but not quite that hit. I mean, it was like $1.2 billion. Absolutely incredible. And like Emma Watson, she's a big name from the Harry Potter, but she's not as, like, she's a lot of singing involved. She's not well known in that field, but very good supporting cast, and Ewan McGregor, etc., who all can sing.
Yeah.
But so that, when that happens, Hollywood is delighted. But they're still way beyond track. They need, there are three big movies left to come out in 2017, and they really need these movies to hit. And they include Thor Ragnarok, which is the next Marvel movie, Justice League, which is huge for Warners, because although Wonder Woman did brilliantly, Batman and Superman haven't, and now they're all coming together. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, a whole lot of them all coming together. If this doesn't work, Warner Bros. Has bet the house on this. And then the big one, which it almost cannot fail, I know that's a terrible thing to say, the new Star Wars.
Tell us your Star Wars story, Michael. You told it to me outside.
Which one? I was just chatting to. I was fortunate enough to get to chat to Mark Hamill.
Wow.
Do you have that name? The name drop jingle?
Wow.
No? Yeah. So just recently for us. Yeah. No, he was great. I mean, because he's notable for being a really sort of decent guy. And if you look at any of his Twitter feeds or YouTube, he's always going to hospitals with dressed as Luke Skywalker. And a lot of people are put off by if they're branded with a character for years and years, and he's been this guy for forever. But he's just a total gentleman, and he ended up actually talking about a movie he shot in. Obviously, he shot Star Wars in Skellig, and they also shot in Dingle this year or last year. But he ended up talking a lot about a film he shot in Galway, a war movie called The Big Red One with Lee Marvin, and great memories of being in Ireland. And it wasn't just when you meet guys who've been, they say, "Oh yeah, you're Irish. Oh yeah, my grandfather is O'Shea, and I love Guinness and potatoes."
Warmth to the country.
He was genuinely, he really was. He had great stories he remembered about the people, and
about Mark Hamill is that, like, you could excuse him for being, "Oh my God, you want to talk about Luke Skywalker again? I'm so sick of it." But he seems to be genuinely, "Look, I was Luke Skywalker. It was the thrill of a lifetime."
It drives me a little bit crazy when people abandon their characters like that, which actually made them.
Yeah. They made them. I mean, he has, but everything else he has done has been a coda to Star Wars. But he was very honest. He said, "Listen, when we started off this, I was sitting in the cockpit, and Harrison Ford, no one knew he was a carpenter. And then there was this big furry dog wolf thing beside me. And we were saying these, like, quite clunky lines, because the script actually isn't great in Star Wars. Mm. I'm going to be hit by a bolt of lightning now." And he thought, this is a bit of fun. And Alec Guinness said, "I'm just here because it's a kids' movie." And yet, here we are, 40 years later.
It's 40 years.
40 years since the first one, and it is the biggest. And this will be Star Wars Last Jedi in December.
You say it's a surefire hit.
Yeah.
What is the word with the people in the inside and the making of it? Is it going to follow in the prior tradition before it?
Yeah, very much. Well, like, the last one was very much Harrison Ford's story. This is very much Luke Skywalker. Right. We saw him fleetingly on Skellig Island. Well, that wasn't called it. It was called whatever exotic planet it had, but it was Skellig Island. We saw him at the end of the last movie for about 5 seconds. He was revealed. But now this is his whole story. So there's a lot going on. And it's also quite poignant to be a lot of Carrie Fisher. It was the last thing she obviously shot. So it's bound to be a hit.
It's bound to be a hit. And the thing is, it's the cross-generational appeal. I'll go with my son, and it's a thing where you're seeing him, you know, talking about these characters and talking about, you know, Bantha monsters and Wampas and all this kind of nonsense.
Here's a quick question for you, though. I know we're going to wrap this up, but my son also, he's 5, and I started to watch one or two of them, but I'm actually confused as to what order to watch all these movies with my son. Yeah. So do we start 40 years ago at or do we start at this?
Well, actually, 40 years ago was episode 4.
Yeah.
So it went 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and now it's going 7, 8, 9.
I'm sure we can find it online.
There's different tiers. I went 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
I don't know.
Maybe it was myself. I couldn't be bothered sitting through the one, two, three again. Yeah. But
that's the way they came out, so that's fair enough.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
I think they're onto a winner, and answers your question.
And are they in danger of doing with Star Wars what
what has been overdone with the Marvel stuff, just sequel after sequel, because there's the Rogue One stuff, there's the Han Solo movie that's going to come out.
Well, I tell you, in advance...
Are they in danger of milking it too much?
Yeah, I would have thought so in advance, because I'm Marveled out. I always have. I've been a Marveler for a long time. And I feared for Rogue One, but it was terrific. It was actually, the spin-offs have been superb.
Yeah.
They got young, thrusting directors, great writers, and a really strong cast like Daisy Ridley and these people, newcomers.
Nice, real edge to them.
Yeah, and people who've never heard of John Garfield, which is most people, will enjoy it. Even they'll enjoy this movie.
Well,
sorry, I still can't get over that. It's still in my head. Yeah.
Poor old Michael. He won't be
back. You'll be dreaming of him tonight.
I've got to go back to work this afternoon.
Yeah. Watch the entire filmography.
And also watch Body and Soul. That's a great movie by John Garfield.
Yeah, great boxing film, yeah.
So, Star Wars to save the poor old Hollywood studios. After
the poor old beleaguered. There are some producers beleaguered for different reasons at the moment in Hollywood. But the money guys are beleaguered, but they need... The force needs to be with them.
Great stuff. Michael Dougherty, brilliant stuff. Fascinating. Funny, yesterday we were talking about the sublime in all the great comedies, and today it was the ridiculous.
Yeah, Baywatch.
With Baywatch. Michael Dougherty from the RTÉ Guide. Great to chat to you this morning. Now, this afternoon, I should say. Now, a couple of songs for you.
Support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01-249-3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
You don't have to answer. Just listen.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services here in the heart of Dublin City with me, Tommy Martin, and my beautiful assistant, Keith Barry.
Thanks so much. And we're here now with Walk in My Shoes regular Dr. Olivia Hurley and, of course, rugby star Jenny Murphy. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks a million.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us today. Do you know what I wanted to ask you, Dr. Olivia, because I'm still buzzing after the game last night, right? And, you know, what I remember my wife saying to me about, because I'm a big sports fan, and my team wins and I get on a big high, and my team loses and I get on a low.
Yeah.
A match like that, for the players, for the fans, is it right? Is it just a case of just enjoy it for what it is? Or, you know, should you just kind of say, okay, don't get too high with nights like that? Or, you know, how would you process them in the sports psychology side of things?
Can I ask you in relation to the players now or in relation to the
players.
Audience watching?
Yeah, okay. Some players.
Well, to be honest with the players, we would try to keep them kind of a bit calmer, okay? So yeah. I think after I heard one or two of the players in their post-match interviews saying, look, we'll enjoy tonight, but it's on to the next now. They've got the playoffs or whatever. So they won't kind of go too high, because if you're kind of on a kind of a high and a low like that all the time, and it's very emotional, it's kind of like an emotional roller coaster, you know? I mean, for example, Dublin football are often kind of criticised for being very clinical in what they do.
Straight line all the time, and not
even celebrating some of their points and stuff. But we've had a very luckily, Kevin McManaman is a good friend of IEDT. We've had him in a few times. And he says all about the way that Jim Gavin would encourage them to kind of not over-celebrate, because you're at your most vulnerable. You know, the ball is in the back of the net the other end if you start celebrating, because you're so busy still congratulating yourself for a score, and then, you know, your concentration and your whole focus is kind of taken away and your mind is elsewhere. So you kind of have to stay kind of very much what we call task focus and in the moment. So it is about trying to keep your emotions in check, which sometimes doesn't make for the best in terms of audience, you know, spectators, because they want to see players celebrate. And Dublin are often, you know, kind of, as they criticised for that. But I think the Ireland guys last night, I mean, there was certainly a sense of jubilation, and certainly the crowd, I think, made up for anything that the players weren't shown.
Certainly,
but I think, you know, Martin O'Neill will be trying to keep their emotions in check. You don't want them to be getting too high, because it's not really good for them to be on that kind of emotional roller coaster all the time.
Jenny, how do you deal with this? I'm thinking of, you've had a bit of a low in terms of the international team during the summer, with such a big build up to the World Cup, and it didn't go the way you guys wanted, versus a couple of years ago winning Grand Slams, winning, doing so well in the World Cup in 2014, winning the Six Nations again in 2015. Is it hard not to have the seesaw, the roller coaster of emotions like that?
Yeah, but I think one of the great things about sport is you're going to have ups and downs, and like, I'm really lucky to be part of a team that had some fantastic victories and some great wins, and luckily have some silverware back home. But yeah, we didn't perform in this World Cup, and it was a disappointment. I'd be lying if I said I still wasn't disappointed about our performance and kind of the lead up to the tournament. It was like everybody enjoyed the tournament in terms of spectators, and it was very well run. But for us as a team, yeah, it's kind of, you have to look back, review, be as clinical as you can, and be harsh on yourself, I guess, but also look at the positives and try and fix it promptly, quickly, and then move on. It's done. It's the same with the victory. Like, you soak it up, enjoy it for a while, and then it's on to the next one.
Keith, I believe you have a bit of experience in the rugby realm as well.
Yeah, but not just rugby, but with sports players in general. I suppose a lot of people out there, they know me as an entertainer, and some people may have seen some of the, I suppose, you know, hypnosis for psychological benefits that I've done a little bit on TV, but I've done it a huge amount in the past, as I mentioned earlier, probably about 15, even more, maybe 20 years now, with all kinds of sports people, and it fascinates me first and foremost, and I really only, I suppose, spend time on things that really intrigue me and interest me. And I suppose for me, when I deal with a sports person, I think really a lot of what happens in their daily lives can actually affect what's going on the pitch. And for me, as a hypnotherapist, really it's key for me to get into their, not deep into their personal lives, but deep into the mindset of what's going on behind the scenes of the just being a rugby player. Now, we all, as a nation, we put massive pressure on players like Jenny and you know, in the both the male team, the female team. We all look at these people. We want them to win. But you know, they're people at the end of the day, and those pressures can really take a toll on those people. Those those pressures then can exacerbate in their personal lives. So for me, I always start at the ground roots, like how are you sleeping, what medications are you taking, do you feel that they're helping you, are you talking to your doctor regularly, are you talking to your psychologist regularly? Because very often, and you'll know this, you know, if somebody comes to me, and you know, a lot of people out there, you know, with mental health, with I suppose all kinds of issues, they're looking for a magic cure, and there isn't really any magic cure. What you have to do is find something that works for you. And very often, me as a hypnotherapist, like sometimes I hypnotize people, and you know, I do, which is basically, I mean, just for people who don't know about hypnosis, it's basically a form of relaxation where you're shutting down or relaxing the conscious mind and helping people to reprogram their subconscious mind. That's the simplest way I can put it for time here today. And when I do that, you know, I find that you can really reprogram and restructure what's going on a subconscious level, which is what people need a lot of the time. But with that being said, some people just, they don't get it. So if you meet them once or twice, they're not really into it for whatever reason, and I'm sure you have the same issues sometimes. And they say to me, you know, I don't really believe what my sports psychologist is telling me. Well, I stop them there and I say, well, that's actually not necessarily the right attitude to have. You have to give these things time. You have to spend more time with your psychologist. You have to spend more time with me. And if those don't work for you, then the responsibility is actually on the person then to find something that does work for them, you know, and they have to put effort and energy into that as well.
Does that tally with your experience, Olivia? And I'm sure, you know, you've worked with teams, you know, across all sorts of sports where you've met people who kind of go like, no, this is not for me. This doesn't work for me.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my first experiences working with a young kind of schoolboy rugby team. And it was an amazing experience because they actually went on and did really well in the Leinster Senior Cup. They were beaten kind of semi-finalists, but they weren't expected to get beyond the first round. And I had a very well-known international who went on obviously to play at a really high level in that team, and he was very sceptical. He used to say to me all the time about mental imagery, like, sure, is that just not daydreaming, you know? And I won't say who he is, he knows who he is if he was ever listening, because we've had chats about it afterwards. And what I find is that actually I take it as a real challenge if somebody is going to kind of be resistant to what I'm doing. I think it's first of all, you have to present it in such a way that you're using various techniques and advising them on various strategies to help them to do better, not only in their sporting lives, but in the other areas of their lives. But it's all based on research. It's science. It's based on kind of, we've done the empirical research. Yeah. So I will always say to them, challenge me if you don't think that this is going to work. And I will show you the evidence of where we know the research is out there that will help. But you do always come across people who are a bit skeptical. I think it's though trying to put it in a way that they can really relate to. So about their physical skills, we would say, well, physical skills, mental skills, they're two sides of the one coin. So why are you not, you know, if you like, putting an emphasis on kind of practicing this side, and yet you know the importance of this
side. It's just another tool in your arm.
Exactly, just like any part. And thankfully it's changing.
But depending on the person, you also need to change the approach. There isn't just one approach that works across the board for everybody, and that's important as well. You know, you change the approach based on the person, you know.
Jenny, what works for you then? Are you a skeptic or an enthusiast when it comes to sports psychology?
Well, initially, like, I was a skeptic. Yeah. The same way, like, when I first joined the international setup, there was increased amount of like gym work and physical kind of commitment to it. So I remember the first couple of games I played, I was dead afterwards. It was taking me 3 or 4 days to recover physically and also mentally. And now obviously I'm in a better nick than I was when I first started, but also I don't, like you were speaking earlier, I don't build up the game as much. I kind of break it down a little bit and maybe focus on little things that I want to do well. So 3 things that I'm going to picture doing well. And normally it kind of works out okay. And then after the game, yeah, I'm disappointed or I'm happy, whatever it is, but then it's kind of done, and it's the feelings of high or the low feelings, they don't last as long. They're kind of dealt with and then kind of on to the next one. So I would find, for me, visualization of certain things that I want to implement in a game would be key.
And when you first did that and it started kicking in for you, did you think, my God, this is amazing, this is exactly how I saw it? Or something happens, somebody runs to your right and knocks you out of whack, and suddenly your visualization isn't quite coming off the way you thought?
Well, I think it was like, oh, well, it's not going to do any harm if I do or don't do it. So I was doing it with other things as well, different kind of warm-ups, things like that. And that just became something that I was